The Path to Authenticity is brought to you by GIA Miami. Founded by world-class mental health experts, GIA provides advanced care for difficult-to-treat conditions, including anxiety, medication-resistant depression, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Using state-of-the-art methods, GIA can help people recover from conditions when more traditional approaches can't. Dr. Antonello Bonci has assembled an expert team serving international clientele in a modern and resplendent Miami setting. If you or someone you love is suffering from depression, anxiety, OCD, or other mental health concerns, call GIA at 833-713-0828. You can learn more about GIA by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting GIAMiami.com.
Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Donna Marks, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 171 for April 19th, 2022. It's my son's 16th birthday. So this episode features a conversation with Donna Marks. It's dipping back into the archive. It was originally in episode 16. And the intro I did sort of sets up the interview pretty well. So you're going to hear that, and then you're going to hear my conversation with Donna Marks. In this episode, I have a conversation with the author, Dr. Donna Marks. And Donna is someone who has become pretty important to me over the past couple years. And I'm going to tell you why. If you've listened to this show, you know that in terms of our emotional well-being, I'm a big advocate for us getting help. In our society, guys especially, we see working with a psychologist or a therapist as something that weak people do. And to me, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. So many of us are afraid, and we don't even know it. And we're ruled by fear, and we don't even know it. We go through life making our decisions through a lens of fear. And I think that issue just kind of permeates this world and definitely our culture. And often it's irrational fear, to say the very least. So because of that, you know, often really facing ourselves, taking a good look at ourselves, seeing our authentic selves can be painful. It hurts. You know, we go through life avoiding that pain. You know, we go through life, a lot of us avoiding pain, and I know that's been true for me. So it takes courage to take a look at yourself. It takes courage to sit down with a therapist and you know, it's not as much about sitting down with the therapist as it is being willing to feel. And what I believe is if we're not even willing to feel, you know, are we really being real? We're being fake. So a few months ago, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He was in the process of beginning this serious, significant life transition. And I posed the question, have you thought about talking to someone about this? And he bristled. You mean a therapist? What is it about me that makes you think I would need a therapist? I'm not depressed. I'm not having any problems. What purpose would that serve? So I'm going to read something now that speaks to this. The purpose of psychotherapy. Very simply, the purpose of psychotherapy is to remove the blocks to truth. Its aim is to aid the patient in abandoning his fixed delusional system and to begin to reconsider the spurious cause and effect relationships on which it rests. No one in this world escapes fear, but everyone can reconsider its causes and learn to evaluate them correctly. God has given everyone a teacher whose wisdom and help far exceed whatever contributions an earthly therapist can provide. Yet there are times and situations in which an earthly patient-therapist relationship becomes the means through which he offers his greater gifts to both. What better purpose could any relationship have than to invite the Holy Spirit to enter into it and give it his own great gift of rejoicing? What higher goal could there be for anyone than to learn to call upon God and hear his answer? And what more transcendent aim can there be than to recall the way, the truth, and the life, and to remember God? To help in this is the proper purpose of psychotherapy. Could anything be holier? For psychotherapy, correctly understood, teaches forgiveness and helps the patient to recognize and accept it. And in his healing, is the therapist forgiven with him. Everyone who needs help, regardless of the form of his distress, is attacking himself. And his peace of mind is suffering in consequence. These tendencies are often described as quote-unquote self-destructive, and the patient often regards them in that way himself. What he does not realize and needs to learn is that this quote-unquote self, which can attack and be attacked as well, is a concept he made up. Further, he cherishes it, defends it, and is sometimes even willing to, quote, sacrifice his, quote, life on its behalf, for he regards it as himself. This self he sees as being acted on, reacting to external forces as they demand, and helpless amidst the power of the world. Psychotherapy, then, must restore to his awareness the ability to make his own decisions. He must become willing to reverse his thinking and to understand that what he thought projected its effects on him were made by his projections on the world. The world he sees does not, therefore, exist. Until this is at least in part accepted, the patient cannot see himself as really capable of making decisions, and he will fight against his freedom because he thinks it is slavery. The patient need not think of truth as God in order to make progress in salvation, but he must begin to separate truth from illusion, recognizing that they are not the same, and becoming increasingly willing to see illusions as false and to accept the truth as true. His teacher will take him on from there, as far as he is ready to go. Psychotherapy can only save him time. The Holy Spirit uses time as he thinks best, and he is never wrong. Psychotherapy under his direction is one of the means he uses to save time and to prepare additional teachers for his work. There is no end to the help that he begins and he directs. By whatever routes he chooses, all psychotherapy leads to God in the end. But that is up to him. We are all his psychotherapists, and he would have us all be healed in him. That's from A Course in Miracles. Donna Marks, among other things, has been a teacher of A Course in Miracles for decades. So, you know, over the past 4 or 5 years, again, if you've listened to this, I mean, I've lived in this world of healers and helpers for half my life at this point, and I know a lot of therapists. I've seen a lot of therapists. I've seen them as a client. I've seen them as a peer and a colleague. I know that world pretty well. And so over the last 4 or 5 years, I've been keeping my eye out for a therapist, the right therapist, because I had been through enough to know, you know, I'm not finding what I need here. I haven't found the right person at the right time to really help me get down to my core issues, which, you know, we all have our core sources of distress in our lives, whether we want to own it and accept it or not. It's just the way it is. So, I had been keeping an eye out for a therapist. And, you know, over the years, I had heard about the course, A Course in Miracles, and, you know, never really knew what it was all about. I read a little bit about it. But one observation I began to make time and time again is that the people who I met over the years, who from a spiritual standpoint I respected most, who I wanted to learn from, one thing they all had in common was at one time or another, they studied A Course in Miracles. So I kind of made a mental note of that. And a couple years ago, someone invited me to a class and I went and, you know, I was really into it. I was in the midst of struggling with this conflict and this relationship. And what I began to see, because I started studying the course, is that what I was doing, you know, as I was looking at this person as doing something to me, and, you know, that was upsetting me, and it was not what I thought it was. It was what it really was me projecting my fear onto her that, okay, I'm not going to let her do this and hurt me the way that other person hurt me in the past. I'm not going to do that. So I projected this crap onto her and it was causing conflict. And that's what was going on with me when I started studying the course. And so it helped me immediately to stop doing that and allow the people in my lives to be who they are and not be what I project onto them. You know, that woman was not, she didn't deserve to be gauged against the last relationship I was in or the one before that or any other one. She was innocent and she deserved to be treated that way by me. So the course helped me understand that. And I started to study it more, show up at groups and classes. And one of the classes that I, found myself at was that of Donna Marks. You know, let me just say, again, like this whole stigma about therapy, it's ridiculous. I mean, people need help. And, you know, that's why I'm talking about this right now. That's why I talked to Donna. So, yeah, I mean, this stigma is a problem. We live in a society where most marriages end in divorce. And, you know, if we really look deep down, a lot of us aren't very happy, whether we're in a relationship or not. And so it's just ridiculous to me that we'd be so averse to getting help or to talk about it. So, you know, I'm here to do my part. For the most part, I'm a pretty open book. I don't really have a hard time talking about stuff, but there are a couple exceptions. And one of those is as it pertains to romantic relationships. And I don't know what it is about my history or my past that makes it feel unsafe for me to talk to people about that stuff. But it does. It feels that way. So having spent some time around Donna, hearing the feedback that she gave us at this group, of A Course in Miracles, and just hearing, the way she looks at the world and the way she views issues, I knew she would understand how I felt, what I was going through, what I was seeing, where I needed to go. So, you know, it was this challenging situation that I was in with another person who was great. And, but I needed help. I needed help. There were some things going on that I just needed somebody to walk me through it. So, you know, and I was ready to stop avoiding the pain and look at the patterns, and you know, I'd already kind of started to do that. And, but that's the context with which I entered into this relationship with Donna Marks. And, you know, I wouldn't be here doing this podcast if it wasn't for Donna Marks. I mean, you know, there are other people too, but you know, she has helped me, you know, love myself in a way that I didn't before. And to have the courage to really put myself out there into the world like this, like I am right now, because this is as real as it gets, folks. I mean, I'm bearing my heart to the world right here. You know, so if you're going to judge me, you're going to judge me. There's nothing I can do about that. But it's real. So that's Donna Marks to me. I'm pretty excited about having her on the podcast. And, you know, she's just as good as any therapist as I've ever met. And I've met a lot. But, yeah, she's important to me. She's been very, very good to me and has helped me, supported me as much as anyone on earth ever has. So, you know, I love Donna. She's been so important to me. You know, what I've talked about in this little monologue here, a lot of it comes up in our conversation, and, we talk about a book that she recently published. It's called Learn, Grow, Forgive. There will be a link to it in the show notes if you're interested. So here she is, Donna Marks. Enjoy. You've heard a lot about me, and I'm really excited to hear about you. So you recently published a book.
Yes.
And it's called Learn, Grow, Forgive.
Yes.
And then what's the subtitle?
A Path to Spiritual Success.
Path to Spiritual Success. So I was hoping you could tell me, you know, how it is you came to this place in life where you wrote this book.
Well, it was an accumulation of my childhood and my 32 years of professional experience working as a therapist. And I noticed in myself and in patients during my life that people would get into patterns, and particularly relationship patterns, but any addiction. And they would get stuck there, and they would try to work their way out. And even people who had a lot of therapy and people who had been in recovery, and even therapists would get trapped in these places of keep going back into a situation that they didn't want to be in. It could mainly what I noticed was in relationships. That seems to really bring up everyone's stuff. And, you know, rather than being able to just recognize that that wound is there, they would break up with the person and go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And the more that they did that, the more powerless they felt, the more frustrated they felt, the more down they felt. And this could be with any type of pattern. It's not just with relationships, but that's the one that I noticed the most. And that's really what inspired me to write the book.
And in the book, you know, I haven't read it yet. You know, I've watched some of your YouTube videos, which will be in the show notes for the podcast, so people can watch those. But you refer to it as our template.
Yes.
So that's something you talk about a lot. So,
right.
So will you explain what that?
Sure.
The simple way to describe that.
Yes. Well, I talk about templates and imprints. And they kind of go together in all of our relationships. And, you know, any addiction is a substitute for a meaningful self-love, which gets transferred to another person. That's where we get blocked. And a template is how you're wired, you know, what you experienced as a child, what you saw your parents doing, how they related to each other, and then how they related to you. So if you had a real pleasant childhood, then you have a pain-free template, basically. Mm-hmm. Or you could have even had a lot of pain in your childhood, but you had good parents that helped you work through that pain so it didn't get stuck in the template. Mm-hmm. Or if you had severe abuse and things like that, then you have a pain template. And if that doesn't get healed early on, we tend to carry that forward in our lives, and we reenact it again and again and again.
Hmm.
So in other words, a person who watched alcoholic parents or watched parents fight or watched parents not take care of themselves or their children, we tend to still have that pain inside of us. And we either try to continue to get that need met through other people, which will never work, or we tend to be like our parents and do those kinds of things that we witness because we don't know another way.
So this book is to help people identify their template.
Yes.
And then learn to work through this process and
yes.
really feel their feelings, right?
And that's the the template and the imprint are the part of the book that's called Grow.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry, that's part of the book that's called Learn.
Right.
And so we want to learn what happened to us as children. We want to be willing to face what happened. So many people think, oh, my child was fine, you know, it was good. I mean, we weren't perfect. But then when you start recognizing what's going on in their life now and it's not working, it's clear that something inside of the person is not healed. And that's why their life isn't working now. And the addiction is just a symptom of that. It's not really the main problem. Mm-hmm. And so that's the template. And then the imprint is the part where we get fixated romantically. Mm-hmm. You know, that first, that major passionate feeling towards someone, the way that person looked gets branded in our brain. And so we tend to treat that person as the one and only type of look, type of love object because it has been imprinted. And then we go through life not really understanding what a good connection looks like and what a compatible connection looks like because we have the pain template. And then on top of that, we have the romantic imprint. So two people get together who are strongly attracted mm-hmm. to each other, but their wounds will collide with one another. And if they use that to heal, then they're into the growth phase. But more often than not, they re-injure one another.
Pretty heavy stuff,
yes.
isn't it?
Yes.
So
yes, and it takes a lot of courage to face that and to work through it.
It's painful stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why we avoid these things,
yes,
isn't there?
Yes. But what we have to realize if we want to be free from the pain is that it's like any kind of pain. You know, you have a pain in your side, your appendix is, you know, needs attention, and it's not fun to have the surgery and hurt afterwards, but then it's behind you,
right,
and you're not carrying that pain throughout your life. So it's like that expression, you know, you go through that short-term pain for that long-term gain, mm-hmm, of being free from it. And I mean, really doing the work so that you really are free of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, I know enough about you that you, you have a pretty eclectic array of training.
Thank you.
Right, and experience.
Thank you.
And, you know, like, You're imago trained, if I remember right. Is that right or no?
No, I actually did not get certified in imago therapy.
Okay, well, I can cut that part
out. Yeah.
For some
reason. Since we're being authentic,
yes,
it's okay.
I guess so. But
I,
you know,
I can see why you would think that,
especially
because A Course in Miracles is, you know, imago therapy is based on A Course in Miracles.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he was a student.
Harville Hendricks.
Hendricks, yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So he kind of developed that out of A Course in Miracles type model.
Well, and, you know, when you're talking about the template and the imprint, I mean, that reminded me.
Yes.
And I don't know a lot about imago therapy, but it reminded me.
It's basically helping people to recognize that they are repeating their past. Yeah,
which isn't
enough, really. You know, it's not enough
to recognize it.
Right.
Right.
That's the second part of the book where you grow and you have to feel that pain and heal the pain.
Yeah. That seems to be the really hard part.
Yes. That's where people get stuck all the time. You know, they'll start doing the workbook or the online course. And what do you mean I have to answer these questions? I started answering those questions and, I couldn't do it, you know, because it starts really bringing up stuff that we've stuffed and ignored our whole lives.
Yeah, I mean, this is where denial and the other ego defenses that we all possess. And, you know, my understanding of them has been that, you know, they're there to protect us in the beginning.
Yes.
But then when we lean on them too much, it ends up destroying us.
Right. You know? Well, Freud was the first to talk about things getting repressed into the unconscious. And I touch on this lightly in the book. But things that are uncomfortable for children because they're made to feel uncomfortable, like aggression and sexual impulses, those get repressed because the reactions to the caretakers are, no, don't do that, or you can't get angry, or no, don't touch yourself, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Rather than teaching the child, you know, that these are natural things and it's okay, but there's ways that we handle these things. And so they get repressed, you know, those feelings get repressed and they go into the unconscious and then they get, of course, coming out all kinds of different directions throughout life.
Yeah. This stuff, you know, I was talking to a psychologist a few weeks ago, an episode that came out 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I think one of the things, I've been fortunate to be able to say that this stuff really fascinates me.
Yes. Yes.
So when it came time for me to need to heal, I think that has really worked in my favor.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. That your inner child is still curious and willing, you know, willing to get on the field and play ball.
Absolutely. So where did this all begin for you? How is it that, you know, you have evolved into a place where you write a book like this? Where did all this start?
Well, it started in my own childhood. My biological parents were divorced when I was a couple years old. I do have memories of my biological father being very angry and raging a lot, and he was not a part of my life growing up. And my mother remarried my stepfather, who I really did love. He was very interactive with me, but he was also a rager and an alcoholic. And then when he was drunk, he would make sexual advances, even when I was a little tiny child, which I internalized. And fortunately, I always had some type of spiritual connection where I listened to an inner voice and it said, it's not your fault and you don't have to. Mm-hmm. So that I listened to that and I just kind of shied away from him and made sure that I wasn't cooperating with his advances, but I don't think it, you know, really protected me from the wound. I mean, I felt very devastated. I internalized it that I must have done something to cause it. And then that combined with the raging and he would beat the dog, beat me. It was bad. My mom was working nights as a nurse, and she was basically a good mom, but she was tired. So I was a little tiny child taking care of myself. He would be gone, fortunately, he was in the military, so he would be gone for 6 months at a time. But I was an only child, very, very lonely and very, very sad. Fortunately, I had grandparents on my mother's side who took a lot of care and interest in me. And they were kind of like at the other extreme. Now they seemed bored with life. They were very highly structured, very mechanical, but there was a lot of security there and normalcy. So I took that into my template. And so that was helpful. I really, by the time I was like, I think it was like 13, 14, I really started having a lot of psychological trauma, acting it out more. I started drinking. I started smoking when I was 12. To medicate the feelings I was having. And then I tried to commit suicide when I was 15. And I was sent to a psychiatrist. That was a completely failed experience. I knew he didn't know what he was doing with me anyhow. But he did suggest that I be allowed to move out of my home. And I was working. I was quite capable. I was going to school, working. And, but for some reason, they didn't want me to move out of my home. I think they thought they could, you know, fix it or whatever. So I wound up getting married. I was divorced when I was 18 with a child. Quit school, went to night school to get my high school diploma and started my own dysfunctional family addictions, even as a single parent. And, but there was something inside of me that kept saying, you know, you can do better. You can do better than this. You don't have to do this. So I did. I made a lot of mistakes in my life, but it's been a lifelong search of trying to do better and healing. And when I first started my own healing work, and when I was about 30, when I first went into recovery, well, I'd been in a lot of therapy before that, by the way, and they never touched on addiction in the family or personal addiction. They just didn't know, I guess. So when I went into my own personal recovery, I really started recognizing, you know, that I had a lot of work to do. And I went into Gestalt therapy, did a lot of healing there, got certified in Gestalt therapy, did hypnotherapy, got certified in that, got my addictions training. It was like one thing after the next. I recognized I need more, more. So, and I was also working with other people. So I could see where we were all stuck, you know. So I just kept pushing on through and did a personal training in psychoanalysis, which is very intense. And, and that I did that for 13 years, which was like a minimum of twice a week and sometimes four times a week.
You mean your own therapy?
My own personal analysis. Plus, I got certified in psychoanalysis, which is also you go back to school for, in my case, it was 4 years plus 4 years of supervision doing psychoanalysis with patients. So, and even all of that, I was still stuck.
So, for someone who doesn't know, you know, I mean, I've had enough education and training to know that there's a big, big difference between psychotherapy and psychoanalysis.
Right.
So can you explain that?
Yes. Well, psychoanalysis is psychotherapy, but psychotherapy isn't psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis, I mean, it's not so easily explained, except that it was started by Freud, and then a lot of other people formulated off of his theories and to put their own take on it. I have yet to read any type of therapy currently that hasn't taken from Freud. You know, they don't even know they're doing it most cases. But he actually learned how to tap into the unconscious. And the most valuable part of psychoanalysis is that the analyst is trained to understand that everything that's going on with the patient is through transference, what happened to that patient, what they, how they experience relationships. And then the analyst is able to, ideally able to stay neutral, even when they're reacting. They use their reactants to analyze what happened to the person.
Right.
They recognize that they can help to heal the relationship. It's very similar to the Course in Miracles. All the past comes up in the analytic, in the analysis, but the analyst helps the person. No, I'm not your mother. I'm not your father. This is now. We can work through this now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of times patients don't want to do it, but usually if they commit to psychoanalysis, they will hang in there in that process and they will do it. Not everybody's a candidate for psychoanalysis, though. They have to be able and willing to tolerate all of that, which is very, very, very uncomfortable. But it's good for the relationship part of a therapy, but it doesn't necessarily heal the wound. A person can stay in psychoanalysis for a long time and still have an active addiction. A person can stay in psychoanalysis for a long time and never mourn.
So you really have come to a place where you've used all of these different bits and pieces to create
the book.
The book.
Yes.
Now, tell me where A Course in Miracles came in, because I know you've been a teacher for a long time, right?
Yes. I've been a teacher for about 34 years now.
Wow.
As long as I've been a therapist, or shortly after I was a therapist, I started teaching. I liked it because it was the church that I always looked for, the religion. It was spirituality and not religion. And when I first read it, I'm like, well, I had already thought, you know, if Jesus came today, you know, he would be telling us the same thing he did then. It's all about love, and all this other conversation is ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, just love each other, love yourself, love each other, love yourself, find a higher power,
right.
love. Right. And I was telling somebody that, and she said, oh, you probably like The Course in Miracles. I'm like, well, what is that? And she said, oh, it's a book. You know, she said, I don't know much about it, but they sell it over at the Unity Church. So I hightailed it over the Unity Church, and I said, do you have A Course in Miracles? And she said, oh, yes, here it is. And I took it home and started reading, and I'm like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. It was like I knew I was supposed to be reading it, and I already knew inside that this is what spirituality is. It's not about going someplace and getting downloaded. It's about learning how to access the spirit within you, the love within you. And the course teaches us how to choose love or how to choose fear. And so that's where we have to draw from when we hit these blocks in our own healing process. Am I going to stop because it's uncomfortable, because I can't afford it, because I don't have time, because it's, you know, I don't like it anymore. I don't like my therapist anymore. She doesn't like me, you know, all that stuff, which is not real. Or am I going to choose love and work this through until my wounds are excavated, until they're released. And I know how to have a healthy relationship because I've stayed in therapy and experienced those conflicts and worked through them. And learn to be in the now, and I'm free from the addictions. And even if I could engage in them, I wouldn't want to do it because I love myself now. It's not worth it anymore.
Right.
It's just not what feels good anymore. So, and it's a process. And so that's the, you know, forgive part is to, no matter, you never quit. You never give up. You never quit. It doesn't matter how many times you regress. Each time, that is a step into deeper healing. So every time, so many times people will tell me, I can't believe I did this again. And I'll say, but it's good that you did it again because something triggered you doing it again. What came up? Oh, I really remember how lonely I was as a child and how, you know, I just couldn't, I just wanted a parent and there was nobody there. And so they say, oh, yeah, I'm doing that with this person. They can't be there for me. But it brings, so now you're at a deeper, you're deeper into the work inside yourself. This is good. You didn't know that before. Now you have another whole step out of it. So, and we just keep working at that level and working at that level.
You know, one of the things I've learned, especially over the last few years, about myself, but I've also observed it in other people, is that we judge ourselves for feeling what we feel. Right. So we not only have this feeling that we identify as negative or describe as negative.
Yes.
But then we have a reaction to it where we might even experience shame.
Yes.
I know for me, you know, at 17 years sober, the thought that, well, I shouldn't feel this way. I've been sober too long to feel this way.
Rather than, thank goodness, this feeling's coming up.
Right, right. And that feeling, that judgment, you know, I don't know that it kept me away from getting, I mean, it induced fear of, you know, and, you know, I want to conceal this, you know, because I'm judging myself. I don't, you know, I don't want other people to know that because that I feel this way because I'm supposed to be healthier than that at this point in my life.
Right.
And there must be a lot of people who go through that.
Oh, yes. Especially in recovery. Mm-hmm. Like they can be sober for a long, long time, but not feel authentic because they haven't healed the past. They might have acknowledged it. And it's a big problem, in my opinion, in recovery that you do the steps and you do a moral inventory. And then those of us that have these kinds of horrendous childhoods go, okay, my role and why, you know, my father beat me.
Right.
I'm not getting that. I was 4 years old. I'm not getting that. Right. But it gets stuffed. You know, it gets stuffed. And, you know, I must have sassed him. I must have done something wrong. Just like the dog went to the bathroom when he's chasing it around, the screeching dog around the house with the belt, you know. So I must have done something wrong, but I have no idea why I had those blisters on my body from that belt. You know, I just can't quite wrap my mind around that. But, you know, it just gets repressed. And the real pain and the real violation doesn't really get honored. So it stays there. And then, of course, you know, people who have had lonely, abusive, and neglectful. I mean, abuse can take all kinds of forms. That's what they attract in their lives. That's what they either be that or they attract it. Mm-hmm. And or a combination of both.
Yeah.
Like myself, I was definitely a combination of both because that's what I knew.
So how long were you in recovery before you started to go deeper into that next layer of healing?
Well, I was 23 years into recovery and then I relapsed. And that was a very conscious thing. It wasn't impulsive. And while I was doing that, there was a certain amount I don't want to put this in a positive tax because it's not the way to do it, but it's what I did. And there was a certain amount of, I had always been a compliant do-gooder kind of, you know, trying to, you know, always be perfect. And if I was perfect growing up, then maybe I could minimize some of the abuse. And actually it did help, especially as, you know, if I could take control and, you know, clean the house and minimize the stress and all that. So for the first time, I wasn't being a good girl anymore. You know, I was like rebelling. So it wasn't the way to do it, but it did bring me to a more authentic level of myself. And at that point, I dug deep. I dug really deep and I started allowing myself to really, really feel. And, I wasn't in therapy at the time. I'd finished every kind of therapy all over the world, spirituality and everything. I said, this is just not working. Something's wrong with me. It's just never going to work. And I might as well just do whatever I want. But it had been working and that was part of it working. And then when I went back into recovery, it was with a whole different mentality and really allowing myself to go, like I said earlier, into the emotional component and recognizing, you know, there's nothing wrong with the steps. And by the way, I'd gone to all the ACA stuff for all of that too. It's just that, it gets confusing. And so one of the points I really want to help people understand is if you're stuck, it's just something's not set loose yet inside of you. There's a pain, there's a wound, there's something that's still not addressed yet. And it's a matter of choosing to love yourself enough to allow that pain to come out. So many people say, I've been sober too long and I should be well. And they do a number on themselves like I did. And rather than I'm not well and it's okay, It's okay. I got to figure this out, and I will figure it out, and I'm not going to give up. Never. That's my motto. Never, never, never give up.
Yes.
Never,
yes.
Never, never.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that was reassuring to me at one point, was someone telling me that, you know, Bill Wilson and this guy and that guy, a lot of people in long-term recovery reach a point where, you know, there's some, there's a transition they go through where it's a whole deeper level of change and,
right. You know,
and, you know, that happened with me too,
right. You
know, going through a divorce and recovery.
Yes.
Learning what codependency really is instead of just, you know, using it as a label, mm-hmm. which I think gets done a lot in our little world.
Yes.
But really understanding that there are symptoms and, you know, that a lot of it, what it was about for me was not being able to adequately experience or express my wants and needs.
Yes. Yes, because you had disassociated from those early on,
right.
Like most codependents, so we get that, like any other addiction, artificially.
Yeah, yeah.
By trying to please someone or be something for someone.
By being the compliant little girl or, you know.
The compliant son.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And, you know, one of the things I think about is when I got into treatment, you know, I ended up with this therapist who was she'd been around a long time. She really knew what she was doing. And I think she knew that she could just tell me what to do and I'd do it.
Mm.
Because, you know, I grew up in a home where you do what your parents say.
Right.
You know, I was not empowered to question, mm-hmm. you know, what their directives mm-hmm. at all.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, 20 days into rehab, when I tell her, oh, I don't want to do that, it was, I don't give a shit. You're going to do it anyway. But she was smart enough to know that I would.
Uh-huh.
And so she used that, what in some ways was a way that I was compromised or, you know, but she used it to my advantage.
Right, right.
Which is really interesting.
Yes.
But then
and she had faith in you and the process,
right?
And what her guidance was, inner guidance was telling her,
right? Mm-hmm. Right. But then, as the years go by, mm-hmm. like your experience, that it's not the same as being authentic,
mm-hmm.
being the compliant little girl or
right.
little boy. It's not the same as being authentic.
Correct.
So, and then
because. When we're that type of personality, we're doing everything to try and be something that we're not. We're trying to do everything, and we're lost, and we're not mm-hmm. found in that process.
Right. Well, and as it pertains to the Course in Miracles, you would say you're either pursuing love or you're trying to figure out how to be loved.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so it's not really... You're not really doing what you want to do.
Right. And we don't know what we want to do, so we get very confused.
Right.
very confused, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this, you know, I don't know what to do here. So was this love? Yeah. Was this love? Yeah. But, you know, it just gets very all muddled up because it's the same thing of growing up. You know, which parent's the right parent? Which situation is the right, you know, and they're telling me I'm not seeing it correct. You know, so it just gets all muddled up.
Yeah.
So it gets to the point, I think, what I was trying to say about myself is it's what I want.
Right.
It's what I want now. And if I want to see for sure whether or not I'm an alcoholic, then I'm going to find out for me.
Right.
Not because someone, because in fact, everyone in my life told me I wasn't. It was when I went to a treatment center because I wondered.
Right.
That it was affirmed. And so it was always in the back of my mind when my own family was saying, what? You're not. So if it was for me that I had to find out, which was very freeing, you know, mm-hmm. The truth will set you free. You know, and I prayed about it and I said, show me the truth here. I'm willing to face it, but it has to be from within me.
Well, it kind of goes back to the idea that there is divinity within all of us. We have what we need to heal. We have what we need to flourish in life.
And that's the beauty of A Course in Miracles. It teaches us how to tap in. You know, we have the ego, which is our human mind that wants us 10 feet under and will sound very convincing. And, you know, this is the way to go. And then we have our Holy Spirit, which is the love connection, which we have to learn how to listen to that. That's what the training of the course is about, learning how to distinguish which voice is love and which voice is fear. And of course, as I talk about in the book, anger and guilt always cover up the fear. So we never even realize we're fearful.
Right. It can all get very confusing, can it?
And it's, you know, but when we're authentic, we give ourselves permission. We could be dead wrong, you know, and we give ourselves permission to make those mistakes. And then if we make those mistakes, we give ourselves permission to be love and clean them up, make amends.
And kind of realign.
Acknowledge it. This was a mistake. This wasn't the right way to do this.
Wow. So, who's this book for?
It's for anybody who feels that they are stuck in a pattern and they have not been able to break it.
So, what percentage of the population do you think?
I think that very few people have had the kind of childhood that they go out into the world happy, well-adjusted, free, and not susceptible to some type of addictive pattern. I think that's a minority.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, those of us that are in the helping industry, that's all we see.
Right.
But I've been around here for a while now, and I've had a lot of observations in just about every kind of situation. And I think people are doing it much better. I think each generation, there's more, you know, more awareness.
Absolutely.
But when we look at, I don't have the statistics at my fingertips, but I'm writing another book now, and it's in there, like, you know, and just in the U.S. alone, there's over 100 million people suffering from addictions of one sort or another. And when we talk about substances, meaning anywhere from alcohol to heroin to nicotine, or food, it's 90% of all deaths.
Yeah.
90% of all deaths are not natural causes.
Yeah.
That is really time for us to wake up. So in spite of the fact that there are more tools about available for better parenting and all, not enough people are doing that, or because children who have that sense of self-love and wholeness do not go out looking for it and things that will kill them.
Right.
Or just people has who no, will kill right. them. It just has no appeal.
Right.
Correct. Or people that will, are toxic. Correct.
Yeah, it's really, you know, we're kind of off course as a culture in a lot of ways.
Yes. And it's not just here in the U.S.
No. Yeah. We avoid ourselves a lot.
Yes.
You know, and I think, you know, and I know it's not only here in the U.S., but in the U.S., it's the, you know, there's so much materialism and, you know, it's all about avoidance and, you know, and talking about when you mention our childhoods being less than ideal, that is a concept that I know for me, and I think probably for a lot of people, we idealize our parents and our childhoods. We don't want to believe that our childhoods are less than ideal.
Right. Unless we had to.
Unless we were forced to.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't come out until much later in life when someone has suffered a trauma and they're not healing and they're like, why am I not getting better? Yeah. And they're really stuck.
Well, and you know, it brings up a lot of family stuff too when you go down that path.
Right.
Because, you know, you have the family members saying, oh, well, that was 30 years ago or whatever. Because,
or don't go out and say you're an alcoholic or an addict or that you've got a food disorder. You know, that just doesn't look good. So don't do that. It's image. Not true. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different things on the spectrum of repression and denial in the family.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think it does get better as the generations go on.
Yes.
And a concept that I have become familiar with over the last several years is the ideal of intergenerational trauma mm-hmm. or abuse mm-hmm. or neglect.
Yes. And,
just the idea that you can grow up in a home where neither parent is an active alcoholic or drug addict.
Yes.
But one of them had a parent who was.
Yes.
You know, they still are passing down the traits.
Yes. The isms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
the emotional disconnections.
Right. And so, you know, it really, I think a lot of times we want to just think if the addiction to the substance isn't there.
Right.
That everything's okay.
Right.
And that's really.
Sometimes people get addicted to everything having to be okay.
Right.
And that's dysfunctional.
Or like, not okay.
Right. Some people get addicted to pain. I talk right. about that in the book. That's, I think, one of the biggest addictions of all, because mm-hmm. someone who feels dead inside, you know, when they feel that aliveness of the pain, even though it's right. overwhelming, at least, you know, it compels them to keep going back for more.
Right.
And this is particularly true in relationships or any type of deadness, you know, that addiction is covering up.
Hmm. So what would you say to someone who needs to look at their childhood but is afraid to look at it because maybe, you know, for the most part, it was pretty good, but they're beginning to realize that it was less than ideal,
mm-hmm.
but they're the only one in their family who would say so.
Right.
No one else would necessarily agree with that. What would you tell that person?
Right. Well, I would encourage them to wait until they do want to look at it.
Mm.
I would never encourage someone who's not ready to look at it to look at it.
Right.
So when they're ready, then I would suggest that they start reading about trauma and childhood, maybe go to some adult children meetings. There's a lot available in self-help.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to start accessing it. You know, one of the things that I've gotten good feedback about my book is the questions that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
They go right into, you know, what was it like? What happened? Describe it, feel it, bring it up. So that kind of thing. Bradshaw, Pia Melody, these are people who really help people to access mm-hmm. that pain, that unhealed trauma. You know, there's a difference too between abuse and trauma. You know, all abuse is trauma, but not all trauma is abuse. I mean, traumatic things happen in childhood.
Right.
You know, your cat dies, your grandmother dies, your mother dies.
Right.
It's very traumatic. It's not abuse. It's trauma. Mm-hmm. But how the environment helps you to heal that can be abusive or not.
Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking about how, you know, the pressure that one feels from other family members. You know, one of the things that I had to work through early on in my healing process was to even talk about my family
mm-hmm.
because of that loyalty
right.
that we feel for right. our families.
The betrayal.
The sense of betrayal mm-hmm. that, you know, if I talk about this situation in a way that's the least bit critical, man, mm-hmm. I'm like, that goes against everything I was ever taught,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yes.
And I think a lot of people, I would imagine that a lot of people, that could deter a lot of people from looking at facing
right.
their childhood.
Well, I'd like to say two things about that. We can't always heal with our family.
Right.
They just aren't there. So that doesn't mean we stop. We
right.
heal where we can heal. I also think that it's really important that when we do try to heal with our parents or our family, that we do that from a place of love. I don't want to blame anybody.
Right.
I think it's very important that we don't blame.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between blaming and facing. So I had to face what happened to me, and then I had to face what I did to my own children mm-hmm. when I was abusive, when I reenacted the pain right. template with them. So if we go at that head on, you did this to me, like I did with my mother once. She took it, but it was damaging, and I had to clean it up. I'm not going to get anywhere. That's not healing. The whole right. point of any conversation is to heal it, not to reenact it or re-traumatize anybody or force the family member to see something they're never going to see. So I think that as parents, if we like me, who have made all the mistakes, I want to have the conversation, but only from the place of healing, mm-hmm. not to re-traumatize one another. And as a child, I want to be able to go beyond the trauma and to love my mom in spite of what happened.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I do. And all the rest of them for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. It is possible to face these things without,
ramming into one another.
Right. Or, even blaming.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that, and it always goes back to, I think, fear of loss of love.
Yes, exactly.
It does. Because if I say that, my mother or father did this, then they might think I don't love them
right.
or they might, it pretty much always goes back to that, doesn't it?
Yes. It always goes back to love or fear.
Hmm.
So if we're coming from love, and we talk about it, then the object of talking about it is to heal, to be vulnerable, to show feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will either be present for that or not. But if we come at it from an attack, that's not going to produce healing because mm-hmm. fear and anger and guilt don't produce love. Love is what heals. Attack does not.
Right. It's heavy stuff, isn't
yes.
it?
In a way.
It is.
Heavy for those of us that weren't naturally raised this way.
Yeah.
When a child has something painful happen, even if it's caused by the parent, and the parent goes, I'm sorry I said that to you.
Mm-hmm.
It was really mean of me. And mm-hmm. I see the hurt in your eyes. And the child cries and sits on the mom's lap or the dad's
yeah.
lap. And there's cuddling and the pain comes out. It's over.
Yeah.
It's over. Yeah. But it's when it's not, so when we have to learn how to do that when we're 20, 30, 40, yeah. 50, 60, 70 years old, whatever, when we have to learn how to do that for the first time, it is terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, as a parent, that's something that I do with my son.
Yes.
I read somewhere, I think it was in something Pia Melody wrote about, when you're not willing to apologize.
Right.
When you're not willing to acknowledge that you made a mistake.
Yes.
It's like spiritual abuse.
Yes.
Because as parents, we represent the deity.
Yes,
to our kids. They deify us.
Right.
And, and also we tell them that it's not okay to be imperfect.
Right.
That's the message we're giving them, is that you have to be perfect.
Yes.
Like me.
Yes.
And I'm perfect whether it seems like I am or not.
Right.
It's just crazy.
Right.
And it's just so much more loving and realistic to sit down and say, I really snapped at you and I wish I hadn't done that. I'm sorry I did that.
Yes. Yes, and you don't deserve to be talked to like
right,
that.
Right.
I know that I can just tell you.
Right.
Or we can, have a consequence, but it's never okay for me to yell at you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So, man, when I say it's heavy, one of the things that I love about the course that I recognized right away is that, the first time I sat in a group and read and just, had those conversations that take place in those groups, everything's, it's elevated level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
and you just feel it.
Yes.
It feels really, really good.
Right. To be in that grace of truth.
Yes. And also, to be in a room full of people who are, you know, basically focused on doing the most loving thing.
Yes. They're committed to that.
Mm-hmm. Which just that conviction.
Yes.
Is really, really powerful.
Yes, it's incredibly powerful. And how this shows up in the Course, and it's that too, is all about relationships with yourself and others, mm-hmm. of being loved, is that when you are hurt by somebody, rather than attacking them, first you tend to your own hurt and recognize this is, you're seeing only the past. You know, whenever we have a reaction,
mm-hmm.
it's always about the past. I don't care what the cause. It's triggering an unhealed wound.
Yeah.
So then we allow ourselves to process that, and then we talk about the hurt that happened in the here and now.
Right.
It's not charged up with electrical currents from 50 years of stored yeah. up pent up pain.
Because that's what happens when we don't feel.
Right. Right.
When we repress.
Right.
It all comes out sooner or later right. somehow.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, an addiction or right. abusive relationship or, yeah.
And I think some people misinterpret the Course that they're hearing, you know, I see only the past, therefore, you know, it's not okay to feel it now. And I don't think that's what the Course is saying at all. It's just inviting us to recognize that the pain and the reaction isn't just about what's going on now. Mm-hmm. If this was the first time that this situation happened, you wouldn't know what it meant.
Right.
Other than it didn't feel good. Right. And so when we learn to communicate what you're doing doesn't feel good, I don't like it. And now I can see it hurts real bad because it's something that happened in my past mm-hmm. that I haven't healed yet. And are we going to do this in this relationship, whether it's a friendship, romance, mm-hmm. or therapy or whatever the relationship, are we going to do it here mm-hmm. and really transcend it? Or are we going to just ignore it and gloss over it and say, well, the Course says I'm not supposed to do that. You know, I'm supposed to just, you know, be in the here and now and not see the past. And if I'm spiritual enough, I won't be feeling this anyhow. You know?
Yeah. Which is kind of a crock, right?
But a lot of people do interpret it that way. And I have really tried to be a voice for not accepting that. That's not what the Course is teaching, because that is not love. Burying a wound alive is not love.
You know, there are times in my life where I could recognize, and I'm sure this is true for other people, I've recognized it in other people too, that, okay, I'm way too upset right now mm-hmm. for what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is not proportionate right. to what I'm experiencing.
I'm not upset for the reason that right. I think is what right. the Course says.
Right. Yes. But, you know, I think, you know, most of us can identify.
Yes.
At times when that happens, or, you know, he or she is way too upset right now.
Right.
It doesn't add up.
But the beauty is that when we recognize that I'm so upset, not because of what this person has done, mm-hmm. but because of what I've experienced before. And then we can say, well, this is good that this person is bringing this up in me, because there's the opportunity to heal the past.
Right. Right. It's
just bringing it up.
And, you know, the trap that we can fall into if we don't recognize this is projecting our past right. onto someone else.
Right. Onto the world, for that matter.
Onto the world. So, yeah.
So how many times am I going to allow myself to be hurt by this person, and I'm never going to meet anybody, and I'm never going to do, I'm never going to succeed, I'm never la, 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 la.
Right, right.
And I give up.
Right. And shut down,
close off.
Right. And so what we act standoffish, and then, you know, people treat us like we're at, and so right. you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right. It becomes a self-fulfilling
they're
prophecy.
They're not gonna come barging into our invisible barrier. Right
Wow, I love talking about this stuff. I could go on and on forever.
Yeah.
So tell me about your next book.
Well, we'll save that for another time, if you don't mind.
No, not at all. Not at all. I know you've been hard at work.
Yeah, it's really kind of taking one component of Learn, Grow, Forgive and writing a whole book about it. But we'll do that after it comes out.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about? Or?
Well, the only other thing I'd really like to say is that there's a lot of pain out there. And I understand that pain. And Nobody has to suffer anymore if they don't want to. And it's scary to face it. It takes a lot of courage to face it and to embrace it and work through it. But it's so worth it. I can tell you, you know, from someone who's walked it and been through it and failed many times, that it will all come together and your life will come together like you imagined it as a child. Your vision of the future is there for a reason. And you just have to, as the Course says, you just have to be willing to remove the barriers to what's stopping you from achieving that kind of love in your mm-hmm. life and that kind of success in whatever form it takes. It's all love, whether it's your career, your relationship, or where you live or whatever. It's mm-hmm. all, you know, it's all there for a reason, and it's there for you to embrace it. And to be willing to do that, you are worth it. That's really the message I want to get out there, and to never, ever, ever give up. My life is like I imagined it would always be when I was a little girl, and I'm so grateful for that, and I'm truly happy and joyous, and I don't stay in the fear. Mm-hmm. We're always going to have it, but it's like, oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. See ya. Yeah. I'm choosing love instead. And when you get that sense of connection to not only people, but to yourself, to the planet, to everything, mm-hmm. everything. Everything is like, you look around, it's like, oh my God, this is such a great place. I missed out. Right. I used to think, right, I can't wait to get out of here. But now, you know, I'm really enjoying it, and I'll enjoy leaving too, whatever is next. But it's just such a whole different way of perceiving everything. Mm-hmm. And it feels delightful and wonderful and exciting. And there's no need to substitute all the wonderful, fabulous beauty and joy that is in our around us all the time. We just don't see it. We don't see mm-hmm. it because we're in that place of trauma.
Yeah.
So never give up. Keep going, and you will succeed. Mm-hmm. That's really the main message I want to put out there.
Well, I'm grateful for you, Donna. Thank you.
You're welcome. All Thank right. you.
All right, there you go. Another episode in the books. Thanks for listening. You can learn more about the show and this episode's guest at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with someone. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Every little bit helps. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. If you're so inclined, check out the Patreon community. As soon as I do these interviews, I upload them to Patreon, where the content is only available to patrons, and for just a couple bucks a month. I usually post audio content there, exclusive audio content, probably 8 times a month, if not more. And as these new episodes are released, as soon as they're done, they're available to patrons. So sometimes that might be 2 weeks before an episode is released, or even longer. Usually it's a few days. Anyway, if you want to support the show, that's a great way to do it. So thanks again for investing your time. It's a big deal to me. Thank you for supporting me and supporting the show. I hope you keep coming back. Be nice.
That's our story. I hope you enjoyed the Punk Rock Opera. And we have one last piece of music for you. It goes like this.
Okay, go. you cannot make us. We are the Gen X, man.
Generation, self-made bands, we cut our teeth with bloody hands. The rage that's instilled in us can feed a crowd.
Thank you, and good night.